Here's a test for you. That's right, you, the listener. Can you identify what these pieces have in common? They're certainly not from the same era.
Hit that giant jack, put it in the pocket, I get back. Going downtown, see the man, ain't got time to shake your hand.
They don't feature the same instrument. It may not seem likely, but they all feature one musician, a man of astounding versatility.
I remember when we used to be at the West End, I used to go, Benny Waters, alto saxophone. Benny Waters, clarinet. Benny Waters, tenor saxophone. Benny Waters, vocals. Benny Waters, musical director. Benny Waters, compositions. Benny Waters, arrangements. Benny Waters, choreography. And people would go absolutely bonkers.
Benny Waters. It's hard to know whether to be more impressed by his versatility or his longevity. With his commanding presence, he stirred audiences around the world right up to his death at age 96 in August 1998. His career nearly covered that of jazz itself, yet he never got the recognition you might expect for a man of his credentials. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, a look into the fascinating, little-known life of the late Benny Waters. Benny Waters always played with his horn casually perched out of one corner of his mouth, belying the power with which he projected that full-bodied tone. He had a way of dominating his instruments, whether it was clarinet or any member of the sax family, alto being his favorite. Through them, he sang out with a richness that was the hallmark of his playing, even as a man in his 90s. Fellow saxophonists David Fathead Newman and Jimmy Heath recall.
It was hard for me to believe a man his age would have so much presence on the instrument. He had such a big, beautiful, pretty sound.
His sound was very strong. He would get right to the groove and play in a swing mode all the time.
All the musicians that I love to listen to and admire and stuff put their whole heart and soul into every note.
Guitarist Howard Alden.
And he was definitely one of them. You know, never coasted, never took it easy, never laid back for a minute. It was like a tornado or a volcano or something like that.
He could swing as hard as he could softly wail, demonstrating a range of musical expression that reflects a lifetime of experience.
His career spanned, you know, practically the beginning of jazz in the 20s. And he was playing all through the 30s and 40s and 50s, 60s. And I think he picked up a little bit of the musical language of all those times. So you'd hear something that was right out of 1930 and then something that was right out of 1945 and something out of 1960, all in the same tune, but it all came out in his own personal way. You know, it didn't sound like he was like trying to imitate those things. It just came out because it was part of his musical language.
Thank you. Benny Waters was born at the dawning of the jazz age on January 23, 1902, in Brighton, Maryland. He was the youngest of seven children, a number of whom were quite musical. His oldest brother kept a little organ in the house, but during the day locked it up and hid the key so that Benny wouldn't get into it.
For months and months, I looked for this key, so I can't find the key.
Benny Waters.
So finally, one day, in distress, I just held my head down, disgusted, because I had been looking for so long. Something told me I could play. So as I looked down at this molding, I saw a crack in the molding and a little something shiny sticking out. Here was the key. So I took the key and I unlocked the organ and started playing. Then all of a sudden I felt somebody's arms around me and tears was rolling down my neck. It was my mother.
Benny's mother was moved by her son's facility with music. She encouraged him as he took up the organ, then clarinet, then saxophone, all before the age of 10. But she knew she wouldn't see the fruits of his labor because, terminally ill, her days were limited. Jazz historian Phil Shapp.
She obviously knew she was going to die, and she definitely knew that her youngest child, I believe Benny was the youngest, had this potential, and the mother put aside in her will basically was devoted to Benny Waters' education and paid for it.
After the death of his mother, Benny was sent to live with his uncle and aunt in Pennsylvania, where he continued to develop his musical skills. With the aptitude and, thanks to his mother, the money, he set out for a formal musical education when he came of age.
I was 18 years old. The reason I remember so well, because I was allowed to smoke in front of my uncle and aunt, because I had been smoking for about 10 years.
It was 1920 when Benny Waters began classes at the esteemed New England Conservatory of Music. Again, Phil Shapp.
Higher education for African Americans in the early part of the 20th century is unusual. The New England Conservatory, ever to be commended for this, was open to all, built on, I guess, the ability to perform and, in some ways, the ability to pay.
While Benny filled the gaps in his knowledge as a student, he supported himself as a teacher.
Benny Waters at the New England Conservatory was really studying music as opposed to his preferred set of instruments would be the Reed family. There was very little they could teach him about playing the clarinet. They were teaching him about harmony, about composition. They were building up his skills on the piano. He was already a wizard on the clarinet, and indeed probably on the saxophone family, and felt perfectly competent to train anyone. And obviously having Harry Carney as a pupil illustrates the point.
Harry Carney, who would later become Duke Ellington's famous baritone saxophonist, was just one of Benny's 70-some students. This conservatory experience, as both teacher and pupil, served Benny throughout his entire career.
If a person has a gift, when you study, you add to all that. A lot of people says, well, you know, I've heard people say you don't have to, a person who studies, you ruin themselves, they can't play jazz. And that's not correct. The more you study, the more you know in anything you do.
In 1925, Benny decided it was time to say goodbye to the New England Conservatory.
I left all these 75 pupils and gave all up that little money that I was making because I wanted to be in a big band to play jazz.
He moved to Atlantic City, New Jersey to play with Charlie Johnson's Paradise 10 and found himself immersed in the golden age of jazz. It was the Roaring Twenties. The great early stylists were taking center stage. Bix Beiderbecke, Bunny Berrigan, Red Nichols, Frankie Trumbauer, and of course, Louis Armstrong, who blew everyone away. And listening to all of them, Benny began to develop his own style with the Paradise 10, the namesake and soon to be the house band at the legendary Harlem club, Small's Paradise.
Small's Paradise was, for many people, was the greatest cabaret, the greatest in New York, particularly New York, I would say in America, I'm talking Negro Gabbers now, see. It was the greatest. A lot of people always put the Cotton Club over it, of the glamorous type of show they had, the girls and display and so forth. But we had the show down there. We had tap dancers, we had comics, we had things like the Cracker Jacks, Tumblers. Fantastic shows, you know, see. We had about 12 girls, real dancers. Wasn't so pretty, but good dance, you know.
Though Benny had been hired to play clarinet and alto saxophone in the band, he soon took over as tenor soloist at Charlie Johnson's request. And putting his conservatory skills to use, he also composed and arranged for the band. Of the Victor recordings made of Charlie Johnson's Paradise Orchestra between 1927 and 1929, Vinnie Waters provided most of the arrangements, like this one, Walk That Thing.
Charlie makes the introduction. It flops at the end. Warm.
This is Benny on tenor sax. Thing, featuring Benny Waters on clarinet, tenor sax, and as arranger. Recorded in 1928 by Charlie Johnson's Paradise Orchestra. You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to the late Benny Waters. I'm Nancy Wilson. Another important recording session for Benny also occurred in 1928. He played a date with the legendary cornetist and bandleader Joe King Oliver, one of the originators of jazz. It was an experience that Benny Waters didn't then recognize for its historic significance.
See, it was no prestige for me. It should have been, though, because Joe Oliver was great. But Joe Oliver's band broke up in New York at the Saratoga Club because it wasn't good enough. That's facts. But Charlie Johnson's band was going on and on and on. See, when you're working in a big band like Charlie Johnson's band, on Big Time in Small's Paradise with 40 people, and then go and make a record, you're not even hardly interested, just for the money.
At the end of Benny's life, he was one of the last two living musicians in the world who had recorded with King Oliver. This is Benny on clarinet, with Joe Oliver on cornet. Ha ha ha. Bimbo, recorded in 1928, featuring Benny Waters on clarinet with Joe Oliver on cornet with the Clarence Williams Orchestra. Throughout the 20s and early 30s, Benny developed a style on tenor saxophone which echoed the big tone and harmonic fluidity of the undisputed father of that instrument, Coleman Hawkins, here playing 1 hour. As Benny's idol, Hawkins set an intimidating standard which Benny encountered face to face at a club where a friend wanted him to test his horn.
He asked me, "Hey, Benny, come on, let's blow my horn." So I said, "I can't play. I mean, I can't play your mouthpiece." "Try it, man, try it." So I tried it, and the mouthpiece, I tell you the truth, that mouthpiece played so good that I said, "Okay." So we was playing Georgia Brown, course after course of Georgia Brown, and everybody was admiring me because I was new, you know? So all of a sudden, here come Coleman Hawkins coming in, all frowning up with his horn. Somebody called him, you know? I was watching him, you see. He got his horn out and was playing a little soft to get in tune. You know, that's a natural thing to do, see? I waited around there for about 10 minutes, and Coleman started playing Georgia Brown. I never heard so much saxophone in my life. I never heard so much saxophone, all that phrasing, all his chord construction. I mean, I didn't play no more, see? So I stopped playing and started listening to Coleman.
Coleman Hawkins in 1931, playing Sugarfoot Stomp. Benny followed in Coleman Hawkins' footsteps, not only stylistically, but literally. When Hawkins left his post with the well-known Fletcher Henderson Orchestra in 1935, Benny was invited to take his chair. Not an easy act to follow, as Benny describes in this story, which begins with him being dragged out of bed on his day off for an unexpected rehearsal.
Reluctantly and real slowly, you know, I got up and put my clothes on and went around there. I was sleeping, drunk too, half drunk, you know. I wasn't drunk, but I mean, I'd been drunk. So Fletcher S. rehearsed out of nowhere. Well, out of nowhere, the arrangement that Fletcher had was in B natural, the key that ordinary musician plays in G. But out of nowhere was in B natural, which throws a saxophone in seven sharps. Well, I knew the song all right, see. You know, I knew the song. But I never played in that key in my life, see? And drunk, too, you know, see? And sleepy. So I messed it up, see? So all the guys in the back laugh. Hee-hee-hee, you know? See, so finally, Fletcher says, okay, we forget it, like that. I said, no, don't forget it. So I went over. All I wanted to do is find out what that change was. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right there. That's all I wanted to find out. That's what I messed up, see? I walked over to the piano, and Fletcher, all frowning up, let me get to the piano. I played it on the piano and then and found one of the key. I said, okay, try it. I went back and played the hell out of it. Then I shut all those guys up in the back of me, all of them, see. I'm a fighter, you know what I mean?
In the 1930s and 40s, Benny Waters played with an impressive array of the great big bands of America, Fletcher Henderson, Hot Lips Page, Claude Hopkins, and Jimmy Lunsford. He even did a stint with blues man Roy Milton. In 1950, he joined the Jimmy Archie Band, featured here on the Dr. Jazz radio show, which presented live weekly broadcasts from jazz clubs throughout New York City.
Yes, this is Dr. Jazz, the man who takes you around the town for the best in jazz straight from the local dispensary. Speaking to you tonight from Jimmy Ryan's on West 52nd Street near 6th Avenue in New York City, where the music is in the manner of New Orleans with Jimmy Archie and his band. Let's have a talk with the boss. Jimmy, welcome to your third go-round on Dr. Jazz.
Thank you.
People are saying nice things about you.
Well, I want them to say nice things about me.
Well, good. Now, look, it's a cold winter night out, Jimmy.
That's right.
Do you suppose the boys could warm up the people?
Well, I think they can do a pretty good job.
Well, suppose we review the firemen here. Who are they?
Well, the firemen over there on the right there. That's old Pop Foster.
You know? Oh, you mean young George Murphy Foster.
Junior.
And the young man with the clarinet?
Well, that's Benny Waters.
Benny Waters.
Gee, he sounds powerful, doesn't he?
You know, you're right, it is Benny Waters.
Yeah, that's him.
And, Benny played the somewhat rare soprano sax in the Archie Band and was the featured clarinetist. He also composed. This is his own tune, a complete showstopper called Benny's Blues. Benny's Blues with the Jimmy Archie Band, recorded in 1952 for the Dr. Jazz radio show. It features a 50-year-old Benny Waters, a still-growing presence, soon to reach, as you'll hear, all corners of the globe. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to a tribute to the late Benny Waters on NPR, National Public Radio. By 1952, Benny Waters was a 50-year-old icon of musical versatility. An accomplished saxophonist, clarinetist, composer, arranger, and vocalist, he was with the Jimmy Archie Band, which, that year, offered him a life-changing experience. The band traveled to Europe, where Benny would stay for the next 40 years.
From the very beginning at Jimmy Ryan's on 52nd Street, when Jimmy says, "We're going to Europe," my vision was Paris.
Benny Waters.
I said, maybe I'll go to Paris. I hope that I'll go to Paris. I didn't, because Jimmy didn't say nothing about Paris. He said Europe. But I had Paris in my mind.
Jimmy Archie only took Benny as far as Germany, but determined, he found his own way to Paris. And once there, Benny settled down into the Parisian nightclub scene and became the newest member of the growing African-American expatriate community.
Well, here is Benny and I. This was on a sunny afternoon.
The tattered photograph shows a youthful Benny Waters playing with trumpeter and bandleader Jacques Butler.
I was playing at the Casino de Paris and also the Cigale, La Cigale.
La Cigale was a nightclub in the heart of Paris's red light district.
It was a bar. A bar restaurant, somewhat like this. And everybody come down, who was anybody? Louis Armstrong come, that's how Louis Armstrong come down to meet me.
quite a while I worked down there with Jack. We play all kinds of things. We played bebop, we played Viennese waltzes, we played garachos, we played mambos, we played all kinds of things, you know.
Benny was a great musician, a master musician. I thought he was a genius. The man, he could play with soul, feeling. Benny was a master.
Benny charmed the Parisian public with pieces like this, his own tune, My Jungle Baby. Was immersed in the band scene during his early years in Paris, but desiring the spotlight, he eventually went solo. It proved to be a difficult transition, as he explained in a 1982 interview.
It's hard because I work 10 countries a year and work with sometimes, well, for instance, I give it out. I went to England the first time. I did 20 days. Out of the 20 days, I only worked 4 days with the same band. 4 days. Out of the 16 days, I work with band there. And I caught hell.
Throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, Benny used Paris as a home base while building his solo career, traveling throughout Europe, cutting records in different countries with different musicians. He was a prolific player, but so geographically spread out that the media sort of lost track of him. Consequently, he was often a surprise to those who encountered him.
In 1981, I was at the Edinburgh Jazz Festival playing.
Guitarist Howard Alden.
And had some time off between sets, and myself and a friend of mine just walked by a little pub that had music and heard this incredible energy coming out of it. Walked in there, and there's Benny Waters playing with a little quartet. You see this little guy with a hat on. He's playing not only alto, but he'd pick up the baritone and play that. He picked up the clarinet and play a few courses on that. Sometimes in the course of the same tune, he'd play like three or four different horns. You know, just I'd never seen energy like that before out of someone. It's amazing.
During his 40 years in Europe, Benny made an occasional visit back to the United States, and it was on one of these trips that fellow saxophonist Jimmy Heath first heard him.
When he was about 85, 87, he came to New York to play at a place called the West End, and Phil Schaap had been talking about him on the radio on his program. So I went up to hear him, and we were completely taken aback by his energy level. He was already in his 80s, and his energy level was like a 20-year-old.
And the phrasing that he was doing
led me to believe that he was a much younger man.
Saxophonist David Fathand Newman also found Benny late in his career.
And to play the instruments with such vigor, well, I couldn't believe that a person his age would have that kind of stamina on an instrument, especially a saxophone.
It's reminiscent of the Coleman Hawkins sound in its power and his the way he plays the changes. He also knows how to build a groove. He's swinging hard. And here he's adding a little phrase that sounds like Dizzy Gillespie's tune called Bebop, which shows he's been listening to some of the younger guys over the years and employing some of those ideas in his compositional playing.
This is Topsy from Benny's 1989 recording From Paradise to Shangri-La, with Don Coates on piano, Earl May on bass, Ronnie Cole on drums, and Benny Waters on both alto and tenor sax. You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to the late Benny Waters. I'm Nancy Wilson. Towards the end of the 1980s, as Benny Waters approached the end of his 80s, he began to think about leaving Paris and moving back to the United States. Again, Jimmy Heath.
He told me, he says, you know, Heath, I'm thinking about moving back to America in another couple of years. And he was, I think, about 87, 88, and he was planning 2 or 3 years in advance. And I just took that with a grain of salt. I said, well, you know, a person this age, how could he think that way?
But he did. Benny Waters moved back to New York City in 1992 at age 90, a time when most others would just close the book. And then, to complicate matters, a freak car accident rendered him temporarily immobile, and an unsuccessful surgery for cataracts left him blind. Though these obstacles slowed him down, they by no means stopped him. He exercised every day. He practiced every day. He continued not only to play, but to develop his playing.
The thing that Benny said to me is he said, I actually have a new concept of music making.
Jazz historian Phil Shapp.
I've heard that a lot. I've heard that from all types of musicians. But Benny really did have a new approach. The way he wrote repertoire and the way he packaged a set and the shift of his musical phrasing as he concentrated exclusively on alto saxophone is a genuine shift of musical approach built on incredible thought and practice. And he was sincere in his statement, but he was also accurate in his statement. I have a new approach, Phil. I think this is really going to do it. I mean, he was like a youthful musician, even in this way. He said, I'm not quite sure I want to expose it yet. Somebody might steal it. And I said, Benny Waters, what you got can't be stolen.
In 1997, Benny celebrated his 95th birthday with a performance at New York's Birdland Jazz Club. Guitarist Howard Alden.
I remember on that gig particularly, and we'd get there and do a little sound check and set up the stage, and you have a chair sitting there. He'd sit down there and try to get one microphone adjusted where he could talk and get the other one adjusted just right for his saxophone. And he'd kind of be looking like this frail old man of 95, you know, just kind of barely, well, I can't, where's my microphone? Okay, here it is, you know, okay. And we'd play the first tune. He'd just stand up and just all of a sudden just burst out like 80 years younger and knock the microphones aside and everything and be facing the wrong way and just playing his ass off, you know. Just amazing just what just starting to play would do to his whole demeanor.
Because I Love You, from Benny Waters' Birdland Birthday CD, live at 95. Despite his American comeback in his 90s, Benny Waters never did get the widespread recognition one might expect.
Well, one thing, he lived in Paris a long time.
Saxophonist Jimmy Heath.
And out of sight, out of mind, in America, you know, they got a new star every day. They move on to someone else, and they don't seem to pay much attention to history.
It's no reflection on the quality of his playing. It's just what happens in this business if you're not known professionally through recordings.
Saxophonist David Fathead Newman.
Usually there's not too much history written about the individual, and especially in jazz, that is, there's not too much written about jazz musicians in the first place anyway.
Phil Shapp, on his radio show in New York City, asked Benny about this difficulty of returning to the U.S. after such a long absence.
KCRFM New York. You know, Benny, in closing, you were away from the American scene, living abroad from 1952 into 1991. That's 40 years away. When you returned, you were as vibrant a performer as you had been when you had left 40 years before, or when you first came to New York 30 years before that. Yet, we don't hear a lot of your music here in New York City in terms of live performance. And here you are playing as well as ever. How come you're on WKCR and not on network television?
Well, Phil, that's a pretty tough question you got there. You see, I find out that sometimes people forget. In 40 years is a long time, see? Mm-hmm. So if you leave the States, you come back, a lot of the agents that I knew in 40 years are dead or they're out of business. You have young agents, you have young promoters, you have young band leaders. The music has changed, and the younger musicians are inclined to...
And, as you might imagine, the list of challenges goes on. Phil Shapp.
I believe that if Benny Waters had been born in 1882, okay, and then in 1977 was doing what he was doing, he would have been one of the best-known performers in the world. Because, you see, people knew more about jazz in 1977. And this was part of what U.B. Blake was so successful about. When U.B. Blake, you know, when they said, this is the guy who wrote I'm Just Wild About Harry, and he's alive, and there he is, and he can play ragtime, too. People knew ragtime, and they knew I'm Just Wild About Harry, and they said, wow, that guy must be 95 years old, and he is. So now Benny Waters comes along and said, this guy played with Fletcher Henderson, and he wrote for Charlie Johnson's Paradise Orchestra, and everybody said, I never heard of Fletcher Henderson. Charlie Johnson, ball player, right? And so he wasn't able to become what his talents and boundless energy at that age allowed him to be. It's really a tragedy. The anger that they blew it, that he didn't get what UB Blake got, is really silly. I could even say a harsher term. It was wrong.
Benny Waters died on August 11th, 1998, at age 96, as we were in the process of making this tribute. His memorial service in New York City drew crowds of musicians and lifelong friends.
It's like old home week here with everybody.
Edith Rothman was one of those lifelong friends. Benny called her the Jazz Queen.
I spoke to him 2 days before he died, and the reason I knew that he was ready to leave is because the last words to me was, "Thanks for everything, Edie." And when he said thanks for everything, I figured that's saying goodbye.
He was a creator.
Trombonist Al Gray.
Benny Waters was truly one of the all-time greats of history in music.
Bassist Arvel Shaw.
I admired his energy and his lyricism and his gentleness. He was just a great artist.
Trombonist Benny Powell.
Anybody who ever saw this man perform, whether you're a musician or not, was just inspiring because he gave his all to every performance, and everybody in the audience knew that. You knew that Benny Waters gave you his all.
There's a lot of energy in remembering hanging with Benny Waters.
Phil Shapp.
And some of the grief that you delay when someone dies, or the fact that it's kind of silly to be sad about someone dying who lives to be 96, if you think about it, it's still there. There was a message of music, philosophy, continuity in terms of the human spirit in every chat, and there are no new ones.
Benny Waters was a consummate musician, accomplished clarinetist, saxophonist, singer, composer, and arranger, whose command of his instruments was as thorough as his tone was rich. He grew as jazz grew, developing his musical language as jazz developed its language. Despite his lifetime of experience, Benny Waters remained a modest, quietly underappreciated jazz original, but one who took it all in stride.
That's why I say, well, I just go along like the turtle, you know what I mean? Go along slowly, you know? For instance, I don't have no great big house, but I have a little studio. I don't have no great big car, but I have a little car. You see? So I'm not gonna let that jive worry me, see?
Hit that jive, Jack. Put it in the pocket, I get back. I'm going downtown to see that man. Ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. In the pocket, I get back. I'm going downtown to see the man. Ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit
in the pocket, I get back. Going downtown to see that band. Ain't got time to shake your hand. I'm still on the corner high, all full of that stuff. I'm waiting for the chick to buy. I didn't get enough yet. Hit that jive, Jack. In the pocket, I get back. I'm going downtown to see the band. Ain't got time to shake your hand. Little too late to shake your hand. I just don't feel like shake your hand. Hit that jive, Jack. Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Benny Waters.
Benny Waters, goodbye. Our tribute to Benny Waters was written and produced by Molly Murphy. Post-production engineer, Rima Snyder. Special thanks to remote recording engineer, Steve Brown from WBGO-FM. To KNPR, Las Vegas. To Benny's manager, Russ Dantzler. To all the guys at Rutgers Institute for Jazz Studies. To Phoebe's Place in the East Village. And to Phil Schaap. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Robert Rand, senior editor. Website coordinator, Patrick Breslin. Vice President for NPR's Cultural Programming, Murray Horwitz. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.